This podcast is brought to you by KVH Industries, which creates and delivers the innovations that enable our mobile world. A global leader in mobile connectivity, KVH's groundbreaking, award-winning solutions enable people on leisure boats, yachts, and commercial vessels to stay connected to business, family, and friends using innovative hybrid communications and content. Check out KVH online at kvh.com. At Facebook at KVH Yachting and Boating, on Instagram at KVH Yachting, and also visit KVH Yachting and Boating on LinkedIn. On with the show.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Caroline White and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of super yachting is Cecile Gowett. Cecile, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Caroline?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm sort of bordering on diabetic from chocolate consumption over the Easter weekend, but apart from that, good.
Oh dear. Well, it does feel a bit quiet this week after the Easter break and Passover. I guess everybody's maybe like you, either trying to get over the holidays or get back into the swing of things.
Absolutely.
But we did have a bit of news this week. The biggest sailing yacht in the Netherlands has been delivered.
Very exciting. Tell us more.
Yes. Well, according to Boat Pro, the 127-meter Kourou, which we almost never talk about, departed Ocean Coast facility on April the 6th, traveling at 16 knots on the maiden voyage to Gibraltar. And this time around, it was kind of a quiet departure. We would probably not have noticed if it weren't for our amazing Boat Pro tool. She arrived in Gibraltar on Monday, April the 10th, after a voyage of 4 days, 7 hours. And as of today, she's back on her way.
Okay. So for those who don't know, this yacht left the shipyard in August 2022 for mast stepping. And she is the three-masted schooner that first appeared in October 2021. And she has quite a famous owner, so we probably can't mention them here. But if you wanted to Google it, you'll probably find out.
I don't see why not. Everybody else is saying it.
It's true. Maybe we can. Maybe it's fine. I think working here, we're so sensitive about mentioning owners. I'm now terrified. It's just sort of drummed into me. Maybe it's completely fine. I don't know. Is it fine?
Yeah. I think it was like an unauthorized biography of the man that kind of spilled the beans.
Right. Okay.
Allegedly, is a big business guy, and he has a very huge online marketplace, which may have allowed him to finance the construction of this magnificent vessel.
So this yacht, actually, owner aside, touches on a question that comes up quite a lot when discussing sailing super yachts, and that's whether a sailing yacht of this size and type can actually be considered as a true sailing yacht. So, for example, Sailing Yacht A, which is sometimes billed as the largest sailing yacht in the world, is also often called a sail-assisted motor yacht, and therefore also sometimes excluded from top sailing yacht lists on that basis. Basically, it's primarily used as a motor yacht. So that's an extreme example. But if you're going to use an engine most of the time, is it accurate to simply describe a yacht as a sailing yacht, or do you have to caveat it? I don't know.
Good question. Well, I think it's kind of true that obviously a lot of these big sailing yachts do not sail as much as we think they should. Mm. I think it was a designer, Jonathan Barnett, who started out with Ron Holland early in his career, who told me once that these big sailing yachts use their engines some 60 to 65% of the time only on average.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. And the reason for this primarily is the extreme pressures and loads, he says, the wear and tear, aside from wind conditions and, of course, the imperatives of getting somewhere at an appointed time, which I guess if you were a schooner in the 16th century, you just go on your way and when you get there is when you get there.
Yeah.
But today, obviously, people have limited times. And, you know, if you want to get somewhere at a time, then you have to rely on the engine. Basically what Jonathan told me when he was actually talking to me about this, he had done three very interesting concepts for sailing yachts. And what he said, if I can read this quote properly, is In these huge challenges of performance and pressure, the skippers today are often driven to choose motoring over sailing to save wear and minimize maintenance on a massive number of parts under increasing loads. The objective should be to reduce the number of parts requiring maintenance while safely providing automated reefing through multiple wind ranges. But it sounds like recently you have had a conversation with someone who may have come up with a fairly good solution, haven't you?
Yeah, so this is nothing new, but it's just interesting. So recently I spoke to Ken Freevok, the CPL designer, for an article I wrote in the Telegraph newspaper in the UK. And actually they cut most of the technical stuff out, typically. So Ken designed the 88-meter Maltese Falcon, which is a very famous, very distinctive-looking boat. It's a 2006 Perini Navi that originated the Dynarig style of rig. And he did that for the late venture capitalist Tom Perkins. He also designed the more recent 107-meter Dynarig yacht Black Pearl, that time in collaboration with the Italian designers Nuvolari Leonard. Mm-hmm. But the reason that people bang on about Dynarigs so much is that before they existed, as you were saying, Cecile, these huge sailing machines hardly ever got sailed. The weather had to be just right, and it was such a massive operation to get the sails out, you might just not want to do it anyway, even if you could. Yeah. So as Ken explained to me, in a Dynarig, the sail area is broken into a number of sections that are very easy to put away, and the masts are also freestanding, so you don't have this mess of wires and rigging. So actually, the owner himself can just go and press a button or a few buttons and deploy the sails himself, which is pretty amazing compared to what came before. So a boat like Black Pearl or the Maltese Falcon can genuinely, in real world conditions and without giving anyone a nervous breakdown, sail the Atlantic, sail the Atlantic without even turning the engine on. So that's pretty amazing. I read somewhere that Black Pearl sails 80% of the time. So perhaps we can call her a proper sailing yacht. I don't know. But yeah, we know very little about Koru. K-O-R-U, just if you wanted to Google her. But she clearly doesn't have a Dynarig. She does, however, have three masts, which in themselves break up the sail area. So that should make her easier to control and more likely to actually sail. But hopefully we'll learn more about this yacht in coming months.
I hope so. She looks stunning, very classic, beautiful.
So now for something completely different, but a story that has attracted quite a bit of attention on our website. And that was a story and a picture of Al Mansour, one of Saddam Hussein's yachts.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So this is a really interesting story on our website if you want to go and check it out.
Yeah. What happened to this boat, Caroline?
So basically, in March 2003, just as tensions between the US and Iraq were coming to a head and in the face of imminent invasion, Saddam Hussein ordered his yacht, the 121-meter Al Mansour, to leave her berth in the port city of Qusair, I'm probably saying that wrong, apologies to any Iraqi listeners, and move upriver to Basra. Al Mansour wasn't a military vessel, but she did have reinforced steel decks, bulletproof windows, 5 centimeters thick, and an onboard. Yeah. It's almost like he thought he might get into trouble. And an onboard hospital with an operating theatre. So not a bad vessel to have in place of a military vessel, perhaps. So what it looks like happened then is that the US and UK forces probably intercepted a radio transmission that showed the yacht's movements and then bombed her with fighter jets, which blew up the upper decks. And that's what, if you want to check out the story, that's the amazing photo.
Yeah, I actually remember seeing that on television.
Really? Okay, amazing. Yeah. Wow. So she didn't sink, but there was a massive fire and she was inoperable after that. Then she was basically stripped by the Port Authority. And if you've ever seen pictures of Saddam Hussein's palace, as you can imagine the amount of gold decor on board. Then when most of the good stuff was gone, she was looted by desperate locals, and actually some of her hull was sold as scrap.
I can imagine there was quite a bit of valuable stuff in there, not just the gold or anything, but all the fittings, the fixtures, the pipes, the lights, the cable, the copper, whatever.
Exactly. I mean, it opened up like a tin can, just kind of waiting to be stripped. So she was eventually scuttled close to Basra's dry dock, alongside several other wrecked vessels that are rusting there now in the shallow waters. And she's actually used by local fishermen who perch on the decks that stick out from the water to catch carp, which I thought was kind of amazing. It's kind of an amazing case study, a fall from grace. She was originally a gift from the Saudi royal family to a president, and now she's used by fishermen for fishing.
Wow.
Pretty, yeah, extraordinary. Almost like a kind of biological process, like a whale carcass that's been picked clean first by big predators, then by smaller and smaller fish.
Oh, I love that analogy. That is absolutely right.
Thank you, Cecile. Thanks. Thanks for your charity.
No, it's right. Quite good. Very, very picture-driven as well.
Yeah.
Very evocative is the word I was looking for.
Thanks very much. Well, if you're interested in that, you should also check out our story on Saddam Hussein's 82-meter Basra Breeze. That's a truly extraordinary tale. So I think the last I heard was she was being used as a scientific research vessel for an Iraqi university. And they might make her part of the Museum of Basra, which is housed in Saddam Hussein's former palace.
Wow.
But I think the thing I remember from that story was at the end of the build in Denmark, one of the yard workers sat for a moment on Saddam's bed, and one of Saddam's guys came in and was furious that somebody was sort of defiling the bedspread by sitting on it, and insisted that a new bedspread was ordered from Paris at huge expense. Kind of amazing.
I guess it didn't have that sign that you see at boat shows, no sitting.
Exactly. They should have had that.
Yeah. There you go. They should have that. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
People do seem to read about the yachts of former dictators. A while ago, we got quite a bit of interest for a story about Gaddafi's All Saints Secret Predator 95. Granted, it's quite an amazing story because the boat was destroyed, pretty much wrecked, and this team in Norway decided to gut it and make it a testbed for new hydrogen technology. So it would be the first hydrogen-powered express cruiser in the world.
Wow.
That story is about a year old. Actually, it's about time that I go check back and see what's happening with that because I haven't heard anything more. But yeah, so Gaddafi's yacht is actually, potentially reborn as a hydrogen yacht.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So now onto some news.
News.
So the first 58-meter sea explorer by Dharma Yachting has been spotted on sea trails in the Med, bearing her new name, Pink Shadow. Construction on the Custom Explorer was started on speculation, and she is the first sea explorer model to have been built at the yard's Anatolia site in Turkey. The yacht was sold during construction, and the owner was able to offer considerable input into its design, working in collaboration with British studio Design Unlimited on the interior. Azure Yacht Design has created the exterior, and the yacht features a number of contributions from design partner EOS Expeditions. Pink Shadow was launched in January 2023 and is due for delivery in the coming months.
Very good. I remember the former Pink Shadow. I'm looking forward to seeing the new one.
What was the former one?
It was also a diamond vessel, but it has this extraordinary painting on the bow, which made her very, very distinctive. Another launch that we heard about this week is that the Italian Sea Group has launched the new Admiral 55-meter superyacht S4 Silver Star, whose interior is entirely by Giorgio Armani. The yacht was sold in 2021 with Jean-Claude Carme of TWW Yachts representing the owner. The interior by Admiral Style Center and, of course, Giorgio Armani and his team, says the yard, interprets and merges the DNA of the two brands to create a unique superyacht whose interior is the result of the encounter between the excellence of nautical world and that of fashion and design. If you're not convinced by that, I don't know when you will be. This superyacht is a further result of the exciting partnership with Giorgio Armani, of which I am extremely proud, and is a confirmation of our ability to measure ourselves in unique projects with brands of excellence, said Giovanni Costantino, the founder and CEO of the Italian Sea Group.
So this is not the first Giorgio Armani-designed yacht. Maine, his own superyacht, his second superyacht, was very beautiful, obviously designed by himself inside. And that's the kind of antithesis of a bright white yacht. It's dark, very beautiful, 65-meter custom Kodakasa. And it really reflects the ethos of understated luxury with a kind of homey, subdued interior with natural birch wood. Then there are others, lots of designer yachts out there. Freedom designed by Roberto Cavalli and apparently inspired by Batman. Why not?
Yes. remember.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't look very Batman, but it's, yeah, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. And then there's Flag, Tommy Hilfiger's yacht that I think is for sale right now, potentially just sold, but it's, I'm not sure if it's sold. Sorry. Is it sold?
I don't know if it's sold. It wasn't just in Palm Beach. It got quite a bit of attention. Okay. Very beautiful, classic fetch ship. Yeah. Yeah.
And then there's Rutley E, which is which has Versace interior. So that is unmistakably Versace, I will say. Very interesting looking boat. Yeah, really very glam. So lots of interesting interiors by designers out, by sort of fashion designers out there.
Yeah, very cool.
In other news, Azmat Benetti has chosen to partner with the Sovereign Wealth Fund of Saudi Arabia, one of the largest in the world, in a deal that awarded the Public Investment Fund a 33% stake in the company. The Italian shipyard has referred to the move as a long-term investment in support of the company's next phase of growth, guided by the strategic vision of the Vitelli family. Giovanna Vitelli, chair of the Azmat Benetti Group, said that the Public Investment Fund will accompany Azmat Benetti in the long term, offering strategic and important new business opportunities, including the Middle East, a geographic area which is undergoing strong development. The family, together with its trusted management, maintains the large majority of the group and its strategic direction. So they're not letting go of the helm.
No, no, hopefully not, because it's such a wonderful history that this shipyard has with this family, quite extraordinary. The one of the most prolific yard in the world still in the hands of the family that, you know, founded the group is quite amazing.
Absolutely. So you, I believe, Cecile, have a bit of news from over the pond.
Yes, for once, things are going on in the American shipyard that we can talk about.
Yay.
Isn't that amazing? Yes. So over the weekend, or a little bit earlier, the Berger Boat Company has assembled the hull and superstructure of its largest yacht to date, a 55-meter in steel and aluminum. The custom project is by Berger and Gregory C. Marshall Naval Architect, and the keel laying actually took place in 2020. Part of this yacht was built in the Netherlands by Bulk, a section of the bow, stern, and superstructure, and then was shipped over to Manitowoc, Wisconsin, where the construction has continued. The estimated delivery for the first Berger 180 is 2024. What's really amazing, and that I didn't know, I just found out recently, is that a second hull is currently under construction. It is being built on spec, so there is plenty of opportunity for someone to customize the project. It could be ready as soon as 2026. Why do I say as soon as? Well, it kind of depends on when people come along and when they and what they decide to do with this hull in terms of customization. This one will be entirely in Manitowoc, where Berger is located. And that's Manitowoc.
So, Cecile, sorry, where is Manitowoc?
So that's Wisconsin on the Great Lakes.
Oh, beautiful.
Very interesting part of the country. I used to go there a little bit more. Palmer Johnson was farther north than the Berger. Very active regions for a time on construction. Now, Berger has been there for quite some time. They're turning 160 years this year.
Wow.
Yeah. And the shipyard has been in nearly nonstop operation since it was founded in 1863 by Henry Berger during the American Civil War.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
It's long, long history there. Before the Berger 180 came along, which is the largest Berger ever built, that is a private yacht at least, the largest modern day Berger yachts were the 153-foot Ingot and 151-foot Sicara 5, which is now called Nadan. They're two very different boats that exemplify Berger's tradition as a pure custom yard. The largest yacht that Berger delivered before this was the custom explorer-style yacht Northland, which was delivered in 2017. She was actually the first steel hull vessel built at Berger, because since 1952, Berger had basically adopted aluminum as a material of choice. But although Burger has not been so busy launching large super yachts in the past few years, it's been quite busy with commercial work, which it's been taken on since on a regular basis, refit work. And of course, it's built three of these lovely, nice custom cruisers that are between 48 and 50 feet. So here are some news from Burger Boat Company.
Fantastic. I'm so glad that we got something to say, because about US yards, as you say, we don't get to mention them as often as we'd like. It's always, you know, Italy, basically. Italy and, yes, and the Netherlands and occasionally Germany.
Yeah, well, the American shipyards are still producing some very interesting stuff. A lot of it is under 24 meter, which is why we don't really discuss it, because our focus is 24 meter and up.
Yeah.
But it's quite a bit of production going on.
Yeah.
And but of course, we did lose a couple of prolific yards, Trinity among them, which was really cranking out quite a few yachts. So the US used to rank much higher in terms of the number of super yacht built. And also, I mean, Delta is still working, but very quietly on their side. Very little of what they do can be shown or ever talked about.
Yeah.
And of course, Westport is still building. So,
yeah.
But yes, it's true. We don't get to talk to them about them so often.
Yeah. Okay. Well, on to our regular segment, Brokerage Pick of the Week.
Oh, yes.
So, Cecile, would you like to kick us off with your brokerage choice of the week?
Yes, absolutely. I am so excited about this one, actually. I am going to go for the 139-foot C-Class. I love the look of it. And while she has quite a complicated history, she was obviously very well-loved and cared for. Her original design was by Tom Fexas, a very famous American designer, and the interior was by Orsini Design Associate. She was built by Abiking and Rasmussen and delivered as Del R2 in 1985. But if you look at her sale announcement, it says 2008, which is interesting. The reason being is that she's been substantially transformed. She had a 2-year refit at Delta, as we were just talking about 12 years into her life. And no expenses were spared on the equipment and the interior details. And she had a substantial hull extension, 12.3 feet or about 3.4 meters. She had new MTU engines put in, new shafts, new propellers, new steering, and upgraded interior. The list goes on. The listing broker, Denison, estimates $13 million were spent on her at that time. In her lifetime, she was known as Battered Bull, the Griff MG, Sweet Pea, and Sautage. She had her refit when she was Sautage. As her name indicates, at some point she was owned by American entertainment mogul Merv Griffin, and his picture and autograph are in a nice, elegant salon there. Now known as C-Class, she has been kept in tip-top shape. She has a new bar and offers 6 stateroom and a spacious 4 crew area for 6. She's quite versatile because she has a cruising range of approximately 5,000 nautical mile at 10 knots, but she can also go up to 21 knots. In addition to the updated interior, the current owners has had a battery system installed, which is very sophisticated and allows to, well, operate her own batteries for a short time. And I walked through the yacht in Miami for the boat show in February, and she looks absolutely immaculate inside. She has this nice and woody interior, but she's also very bright. Her bridge has a nice classic look and updated electronics. She has a beautiful flybridge with a jacuzzi, and I love the teak furniture on deck. She's listed for sale at $5.9 million after a recent price drop.
Wow. I mean, I love a boat with a fascinating history, and she certainly seems to have a fascinating history.
Yeah, definitely an interesting history. Now, how about you, Caroline? Who did you go for this week?
Okay, so I went for Pink Gin 6. So this yacht might be familiar if you listen to our podcast regularly, because Stuart chose this as his brokerage pick of the week a few weeks back, because she just had a 2 million euro price drop with Edmiston and was then asking 27.5 million euros. Well, she's just had another 2 million price drop and is asking 25.5 million euros, again with Edmiston, VAT paid. So I just thought that was kind of an extraordinary drop. She's a gorgeous boat. So I think it's really a case of a boat that's very seriously for sale and an owner who's responsive to the market. But if you, you know, if you had half an eye on her, you're just kind of hoping that if a couple of million came off, perhaps she's now just within reach. She's a 54-meter Baltic, the largest carbon fiber sloop in the world, designed by Judel Frolik. I can never say that, Judel Frolik. with an interior by Design Unlimited. You might know the boat by its massive bright pink kite that weighs nearly a quarter of a ton, but she's an absolute stunner. And if I had 25.5 million euros, I may well be spending them on this boat.
You might have it if you hadn't spent all this money on chocolate.
It's a good point, Cecile. It's a good point. Yeah,
it's a beautiful boat and very, really nice. And sailing yachts obviously are quite desirable.
Yeah. So on to brokerage data. And this week we thought we would take a look at Spanish shipyards. Again, a country whose yards we never really cover because it is not one of the biggest producers in the world, I must admit. But it's sort of relevant right now because the MIBA charter show in Barcelona is about to kick off. I think that's next week. And the Palma boat show is also coming up. So in terms of shipyard activity, Spain was ranked 13th in our latest global order book. That's our list of yachts on order or in build around the world every year. Cecile, would you like to take us through some of the stats?
Oh, Spain, please. You know, I have mentioned before how wonderful I am with numbers and how they so speak to me. Sure, with pleasure. So again, we are talking about yachts 24 meters and above. And one of the reasons Spain doesn't rank higher in our report is because they build a significant number of boats under 24 meters. There's actually quite a big production of semi-custom and production boats in that size. So enough said. So in terms of the number of yachts produced in Spain, the number is 142 versus Turkey, which has 706, Germany 309, and the Netherlands 976. The total LOA, length overall, for all this project added together is 4,864 meters to Turkey's 24,602 meters, Germany's 17,918, and the Netherlands 42,055. Wow.
And how about the average LOA?
So the average length of this boat is 34.3 meters. In Turkey, the average length is 34.8 meters. 58 in Germany and 43.1 in the Netherlands. So of these boats, 112 are motor yachts compared to Turkey, 403, Germany, 245, Netherlands, 747. And the sailing yachts are 30 compared to 303 Turkey, 64 Germany, Netherlands, 229. One thing that our data guru who pulled up these stats for us noted is that, surprisingly, the Spanish fleet is nearly half between motor and sail, which is relatively rare. He says, really, that's more typical of Turkey and New Zealand.
The fleet of yachts built in Spain is mainly composed of boats between 24 and 40 meters, but there are a few really big boats. The two flagships in Spain are the Giant Explorers, Ocean Explorer, and Falkor 2, both built by Freyr, and both are conversions. Ocean Explorer was converted by Darman, while Falkor was converted by Freyr. Behind these two giants, we have a real super yacht, the 74-meter Nail, N-A-I-L, I'm probably pronouncing that horrifically as well, I'm afraid, that used to be known as Pegaso, if that's more familiar to you. That was also built by Freyr in 2011. And just behind those, we find three very large support vessels built by Armon. Those are Hodor, Wayfinder, and Nebula. The largest sailing yacht is the 65-meter Addix built by Astilleros Mallorca in 1984. A beautiful three-masted classic yacht. Again, apologies to Spanish people for my horrific pronunciation.
It sounded pretty good to me.
All right. Thanks, Cecile. I'm not sure you're allowed to comment on French, but I'm not sure you get Spain. The busiest shipyard is Aston Doa, which has built thousands of boats, including 65 super yachts.
Right. Very good. Interesting. The current order book in Spain is relatively limited, with five yachts above 24 meter currently on the books, but two of them will be quite impressive. Freyr, which we've already discussed, has two more big boats under construction, including two giants of 100 meter plus on the way. The first one was recently spotted when the hull was moved, and you can see that online. It's called NB724 for the moment. I'm sure it will come up with something a bit more romantic than this.
Snappy name.
Very much so. She's 112 meter. She was designed by Bannenberg and Rau with naval architecture by Marin Technique. She should be launched before the end of this year, according to our records. The second one is a 105 meter explorer called NB729, ordered by an American owner. Again, you can see a little bit more about that on our website. The metalwork is scheduled for the end of the summer, and her delivery should happen in 2025. So much more than you thought to say about the Spanish shipyards, right?
It's true, and lots to look forward to.
Absolutely. Thank you for listening to this week's Boat Briefing, which was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Thank you also to our sponsor, KVH. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.